Welcome everybody, it's Lindsay Downs here, and I am absolutely thrilled to welcome Van Davis, Chief Strategy Officer with us here at WCET. And today we're talking about artificial intelligence and its impact on higher education. And Van, welcome.
Thanks, Lindsay. I'm happy to be here with y'all.
Wonderful.
Hey, so we have been sharing articles and our own engagements and experiences with AI and chat AI and robots in the cloud. I don't know, all these interesting artificial beings, and seeing lots of articles and news and conversations out online and on social media about what this means for higher ed. So we wanted to invite you and have a conversation about what you know about that, and also what we can do for our members in our higher education community when we're thinking about this topic. So to start out, I mentioned you're the Chief Strategy Officer. Can you tell us a little bit about that role?
Sure. So I do several things. I'm a little bit of a jack of all trades. But really what I focus on is helping plot WCET's journey and position in its field. And that means that I coordinate our equity, diversity, and inclusion efforts to make sure that we're centering equity and digital learning in the work that we do. And also making sure that I help coordinate our content to make sure that our members are getting content that is applicable to where they are right now, is relevant, and is timely. And that's really why I came to looking at artificial intelligence and its impact in higher ed. It's an incredibly timely topic, and it's going to have extraordinary implications in higher education and for our members.
Right. Yeah. It, like you said, exceptionally timely. So yeah, I hear it. It's headed to college and it's doing everybody's homework, right? Already?
Man, it's already in college. It's been in college for a while. It's worth taking a moment and sort of stepping back and doing a little primer on what we mean by artificial intelligence.
Great. Because
it's some of these programs and intelligences have been around for a while. So what we're really talking about is what's called deep learning, deep machine learning. And so this is a type of artificial intelligence that is built on neural networks.
Mm-hmm.
So computer nodes and layers and layers and layers of those computer nodes that communicate with each other. And it's actually patterned on what our own neural networks do. But deep machine learning ingests a gigantic amount of information. It runs it through those neural networks, and what it's doing is it's looking for patterns. And then it's able to make predictions based on those patterns. And so if you use a visual program like DALL-E, or if you use a natural language program like GPT-3, which is what ChatGPT is based on, what it's doing is it understands what you're saying, because it's looking for the patterns in what you've said and how that matches to patterns that it's already calculated out of these just unimaginable large amounts of data. And then by doing that, it then can begin to predict what a response would look like. So it's kind of interesting. You know, we talk about artificial intelligence as this ability of machines to be able to learn. And that's another piece of deep learning, machine learning, is that it's unsupervised learning, which means that it's teaching itself. It's not relying on us to write the algorithms for it. It's actually developing the intelligence as it goes. So that type of deep machine learning is a little new to higher ed. And that's what's gotten all of the attention in this last year, and especially in the last month with ChatGPT. But other types of artificial intelligence have been in higher education for a while. Think about chatbots. Chatbots are a form of artificial intelligence. we have members that have done extraordinarily good work in developing chatbots that help students when they need that assistance to navigate college environments, to navigate the bursar's office, to navigate student services. We have chatbots that even work as tutors, and that's been there for a while. We have Georgia Tech's Jill Watson, where they created an artificial teaching assistant, which was just a chatbot, but was incredibly effective whenever they surveyed students at the end of the course. So we've had some of these artificial intelligences in higher education for a while. AI is what helps us with predictive analytics. What's new are these deep learning artificial intelligences that have natural language processing and have visual processing. That's what's new for us. And that's what's getting all of the attention because it's a completely different way of interacting with computers. And I would argue it's a way of interacting with computers and interacting with knowledge that's going to be really revolutionary. It's such a different way, potentially, of interacting with knowledge than what we have traditionally done. And that's going to get, I think, a lot of what our attention needs to focus on. Much of our attention right now is focusing on, can ChatGPT write the college essay that a student turns in? And
Right.
it can. But to me, the more exciting and the more important questions are, how does deep learning, machine learning change our relationship with knowledge? How does it change the creative process? And what does that mean for how we assess students? What does that mean for what we assess? What does it mean for how we assess students? And what does it mean for how we interact with information in the world? And how do we teach those skills to our students?
I'm assuming you're meaning kind of moving away from the sage on stage and helping students actually engage with these artificial beings that they'll engage with in real life.
A little bit. I mean, it's even more than moving away from the sage on the stage, but it's definitely about making sure that students have the skills to be able to engage with these artificial intelligences. It's a new type. What I think it's going to require of us is a new way of thinking about digital literacy. Some folks are saying this is like the calculator moment. If you think about it, although I never used a slide rule, I actually own my father's slide rule from when he was a petroleum engineering student at Texas Tech University in the 1950s. I do remember being taught long mathematics, long division, long detailed mathematics where I had to do the work by hand. And it was very different when I had a calculator. And if you think about it, when we started adopting the use of calculators wholesale, the focus really became on how do you do the math? How do you use the tool? What is the theory behind it? It's not enough to just punch in a bunch of numbers. It's not enough to input information. You have to be able to know how to make the tool work with that information. I think there's something like that happening right now. What we need to do is teach students how to use the tool. They still need to understand the theories behind the information that they're putting in. They still need to understand the theories behind so that they can both craft the right input, but also, more importantly, review and evaluate the outputs. ChatGPT sounds incredibly smart, and sometimes the information is just flat out wrong, but it's really convincing. And if you didn't know the information, you wouldn't know that what it was spitting out was incorrect.
Interesting.
So it's about teaching our students how to use the tool, how and teaching our students the theory behind what we're doing, and asking them to apply that knowledge, and asking and teaching them how to be critical about the outputs of artificial intelligence. AI is never going to completely replace us. We have the ability to reason in ways that it does not. But I do think that this is going to make critical reasoning skills even more important than what they already are. And that's something we can really focus on helping students develop.
Yeah, definitely. Is that kind of that real change, not just the kind of acute fears of chatbots writing essays, and that real change and impact to digital literacy and those that kind of experience for students? Is that what brought you interested in this topic, or were there other things that kind of called you toward it?
That's part of it. Part of it is, so I was trained as a historian, and I think it's probably a little unusual for a historian to be somebody that works on the past to be really interested in the digital future. But what I'm interested in as a what I was interested in as a historian were two things. I was interested in the impact of civil rights on American society. So I was interested in equity and justice. But I also was interested in these transformational moments in history. For me, it was how is the civil rights movement transforming American society? But it's thinking about that transformational moment. And so I think one of the things that sort of brought me to developing this interest in AI is this is, I believe, one of the most important transformational moments in our collective history, or at least our modern history. This is potentially as impactful as the movable type printing press that Gutenberg developed in the early 16th century. If you know anything about history, you know that the printing press completely changed our lives. It changed our culture, it changed our religion, it changed science, it led to the Enlightenment, it led to the Reformation. It was a way of dispensing information and improving access to information that was unimaginable. And it allowed people to communicate, it allowed ideas to cross geographic lines. It allowed the development of knowledge. And I think that we're looking at the same sort of seminal moment. AI is going to have us change our relationship with information. If I can type into a chatbot and ask a chatbot to explain to me in layman's terms what deep learning machine learning is. And in 20 seconds, it spits an explanation out. That's an access to knowledge. I mean, Google has already sort of changed how we access knowledge, but this goes so far beyond Google because it allows for not just instantaneous access to that knowledge, but it allows you to say what level of an explanation you want. You can ask it to provide analysis, and it will provide some rudimentary analysis. I can't help but think that that analysis is going to go deeper as it
At
learns
some
more.
point.
Well, it's learning. So we'll use ChatGPT as an example. ChatGPT is based on OpenAI's GPT-3. They're coming out with a new program in 2023 called GPT-4, which is going to be an even larger deep learning neural network. But what happens is with ChatGPT, you type in a question or you ask it to produce something. And with every one of those inquiries, that provides it with more information to learn from. So, being able to get that information and seeing it learn and become more analytical, that changes our relationship with knowledge. It's no longer about what you know, it's about what you do with that information. And I think the very similar thing is going to happen in higher education. It's not going to be about what information students know. It's going to be what students do with that information that becomes increasingly important. Because the knowing, there's a tool for the knowing part. There's a tool for seeing what the information is. Just like the calculator was a tool,
Right.
just like Google is a research tool. But what matters is what you do with the information, how you apply the information, how you create new ideas out of the information. So I think that what happens is it becomes more generative. It's not spending as much time on the rote memorization because that doesn't matter anymore. It's spending time thinking about what that information means. What can you do with that information? How can you create new ideas with that information? How can you see the world differently? This is, I think, our printing press moment.
Yeah, I that's pretty dramatic. I could see why I was drawn. I could see why a historian would be drawn to that. And I think a lot of the conversations that we've seen, and questions we've seen, and Slack conversations we've seen have had a little bit of a fear. But the way you're describing it, it's kind of exciting. It seems like such a deeper learning experience and journey for our students, or it can be.
I think that's the critical sentence. It can be. It also could not. So, it's not all roses and it's not all excitement. There's dangers here as well. And I w wish we were talking more about some of those dangers, especially whenever we talk about equity. The reality is that whenever we talk about deep learning artificial intelligence, what it spits out is dependent upon the information that it was trained upon. Input garbage in is going to be garbage out. And what that means is that if the information that is inputted in is biased, if the information that is inputted in is hateful, then what gets spit out is going to be biased. What gets spit out is going to be hateful. So there's some real dangers around equity whenever we start talking about artificial intelligence. AI is dependent upon algorithms. Algorithms are built by humans, and most computer scientists are men. A lot of computer scientists are white. There are not a lot of black computer scientists. There are not a lot of female computer scientists. That means that these algorithms are being written from a very narrow perspective. And so, needing to diversify who's doing the programming is going to be necessary as we move forward with AI. Being careful about the training data is going to be necessary as we move forward with AI. Questioning what we want the outputs to be, especially when we start looking at AI that could do student advising, is going to be important. We want to make sure if we're talking about AI that could do student advising, and we have folks that are talking about could AI do student advising and are looking at ways to be able to do that through chatbots, that could be great. But if it advises a student into a certain course of study based solely upon their demographics, then that's dangerous. And then there's questions too about equitable access. I've had a tremendous amount of fun playing with ChatGPT. I'm able to do that because I've got a great internet connection where I live. I've got a laptop that I can do that on. I've got an iPad that I can do that on. I wouldn't want to try to play with ChatGPT on a phone. It wouldn't work very well. It's hard enough doing it on an iPad. You really need a laptop or a desktop to do this. So I'm very fortunate that I have all of those things. I've got the hardware, I've got the software, I've got the broadband.
Are you
But we
meaning,
are.
you said the broadband, but are you meaning like processing power wise or space
I'm
and
meaning just
size wise or?
actual access through the internet.
Right, of course, that too. Yeah, for sure. I know so many of our students still have to use their phones and Wi-Fi.
Well, exactly. We have We have a huge, and the pandemic made this abundantly clear, we have a huge problem with broadband access in the United States. And so there's these questions of bias that can emerge out of AI, but there's also these questions of equitable access that I think that we're going to have to grapple with if this technology becomes more important in higher education. If we don't grapple with the infrastructure issues, if we don't grapple with the broadband issues, if we don't grapple with making sure that our students have the appropriate hardware, then what we're going to do is have a group of students that know how to leverage these tools that are going to be increasingly important in society, and then a group of students that do not. And that's just going to further the socio and the economic divisions that are already in our country and are already in the world globally.
Well, and then you also mentioned that not only is it important to consider the bias of the programmers that initially put these out into the world, but then they learn, correct? So the information that is fed to the artificial intelligence, what they learn could also impact their output, correct?
It could. It could. In fact, there's a rather infamous example of this where I believe it was Microsoft created a chatbot and let it loose on Twitter and let it loose on the internet. And they had to pull it in just a matter of days because it started spewing white nationalist hate language. So the information that these AIs get trained on has a very real impact on the sort of output that they're able to create, which is all the more reason why we have to teach our students how to be critical of these outputs, how to think critically and analyze the output of artificial intelligence, and not just rely on the fact that it sounds authoritative.
Right. So that's kind of another point for that I'd say that's almost kind of an access type of setup is helping to get our students to a place where they can, and that's like you mentioned, the digital literacy aspect, where they can review content even if they use these tools, whether it's for writing or to ask questions as research, analyzing that and making sure that it's correct. And you wrote a blog post for us actually on Frontier's blog and had a pretty outstanding cat poem that I really enjoyed reading. But you never know that, if you were turning that in for a poetry contest or poetry school, you'd want to make sure you actually read it before you submitted it, correct?
Well, there is a, it was an iambic pentameter poem on the superiority of cats, which was surprisingly fun. One of my English colleagues, one of my colleagues that has a doctorate in English, took a look at it and said that it probably wasn't the best example of iambic pentameter.
So there you go.
But it looked great to me, knowing nothing about it.
It's a perfect
Well,
example.
this also begins to raise questions around creativity.
Oh,
So
interesting. Yeah.
something that sort of the visual analog of the cat poem in iambic pentameter is that in the Colorado State Fair this last year, there was a digital art contest, and unbeknownst to the judges, the first place winner for digital art in the Colorado State Fair was an AI-generated piece
Oh, I
of
didn't know that.
artwork
Oh, no.
using, I believe, DALL-E, which is another open AI product.
Oh,
Now,
no.
the artist who submitted it, his argument after the fact was, look, there were 900 iterations of this. There were 900 times that I worked with this program to tweak the output.
Oh.
Isn't that creativity? Isn't that what an artist does, is going back again and again and again? So it does begin to raise these questions when AI can create digital art,
Mm.
when AI can create poems, when AI can create plays or television scenes or short stories. You know, there
Music.
is this question about what does that mean about creativity? And is it possible that we're looking at a world of hybrid work and hybrid creativity where humans use AI as a tool, but then they tweak and they change and they refine the output into something that is their own creation and something that
Right.
is unique.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that picture. I had to pull it up and look at it. It's pretty impressive.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. I'll link this in the show notes so everyone can see it, but that's pretty interesting. And the artist was open about it. That it was via an AI. So, and they certainly did, like you said, they certainly did work and changed it and updated it and had to engage with the AI in order to come up with the final product.
Yeah, it opens us,
Intriguing.
this opens a lot of questions up about what is creativity? What is knowledge? What does it mean to learn? What is the role of reason in all of this? You know, we as humans, we've always believed what made us unique is that we could think and learn and create ideas and use reason.
Sure.
You know, that's what separates us, our
Right.
ability to do that. AI can do some of that now, and it's just going to get smarter. So in that case, then, what does it mean for us to be in a world of hybridity where we partner with AI for creativity, for creations, for poetry, for music, for art? What does it mean when AI can reason in ways that we can't? There's some deeper philosophical questions here that, again, I think that this harkens back to what happened with the printing press, with, you know, the Enlightenment and the Reformation. You know, we began to think differently as humans in the Enlightenment. We began to reason in ways that we had not reasoned before. Is that what's about to happen for us now? Are we going to learn how to reason in ways that we didn't reason before? Are we going to become partners with this intelligence?
It's certainly not the Terminator future that we all thought we would be seeing now, but I kind of like this versus that. This is better.
We're a long ways away from the singularity.
So bringing it back a little bit then more toward kind of the daily work for our higher ed peers and colleagues. Can you bring it down a little bit to kind of our daily work for a higher ed practitioner and maybe a couple of thoughts on how that might change their day-to-day moving forward, maybe short
Yeah,
term?
I think that what we're looking at is going to be a pedagogical shift. We have sometimes defaulted, particularly in gateway courses, in those introductory courses, we've defaulted to focusing on students acquiring information. And then using writing to show that they have acquired that information. The acquisition of information and being able to use language, being able to use writing to show, to prove the access of information. This changes that. It's not about access anymore, and it's not even going to be about using writing to show that you know the information. because AI can do that. What it is going to, I think, push us to do in higher education is to push more to authentic assessment, to focus more on the application of knowledge, to have students rely on metacognition, to have students be able to think about and talk about how they learn, not what they have learned, but how they have learned it, and how they can use that information, and how that information changes the way that they see the world. Mm-hmm. So I think that, pedagogically, our response needs to be rethinking how we have developed a relationship between information and language in our students, and looking more at authentic assessment and metacognition. So that's on the pedagogical side. I think that we are going to have to grapple with what academic integrity means.
Big one there,
You can't necessarily always discern what is AI generated and what is not AI generated, although there are some programs that are starting to create the there are programs that will gauge the probability of something being AI generated. Plagiarism detection software cannot detect AI produced writing. But then again, it can't detect exam mill writing and paper mill writing. So we are going to have to really think about what is academic integrity, and we're going to have a conversation with our students about that. And it's going to need to be a real conversation, not a, we've put AI now into our academic integrity policy, but we need to talk to our students about what that means and why that's there. And then I think that there are some other potential impacts that AI may have, or at least this type of deep learning AI. The ability to create tutorial programs so students can receive on-demand tutorial support. There are some suggestions that it may be able to streamline faculty workloads. You know, one of the things that ChatGPT can do is you can tell it to create an email to a student about a late paper, and it'll do that. You probably want to tweak the results, but in 20 seconds, it'll spit back an email for you. There's some interesting opportunities around accessibility and AI. The Washington Post did an article last month in December, right after sort of ChatGPT came out, about a British man who owns a landscaping business and suffers from severe dyslexia. And he had a client. So because he suffered from severe dyslexia, he always was anxious about interacting with his clients via email. But he had a client that knew this and who created a program that allows him to run his emails, the drafts of his emails, through ChatGPT. And it will automatically put them into better language. It takes his emails and it makes them professional in a way that he doesn't have the ability to do because of his dyslexia. There are some conversations going on about, are there ways that natural language programs like ChatGPT can help English as a second language learners communicate in their classes and communicate in class forums. Because one of the things that you can do is you can feed into ChatGPT a piece of writing and ask it to improve upon it, and it will. The essence of the writing is still there, but the way in which it is presented changes and becomes more professional, becomes more adherent to English language grammar principles. So there are some ways that it can impact our daily work in higher education. And then there's probably ways that we haven't thought about yet.
Of course, yeah, definitely. And I assume for students and instructors in philosophy courses, they'll have lots and lots of topics to talk about with that too.
Yes, I think that there's going to be the potential for a lot of discussion in philosophy courses about what this means for humanity.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll get to see some of those some meaning making coming from essays that have been written by either students or by AI. We'll see. But so we've talked a lot about kind of a few of the challenges. I think we'll probably come out with some more information regarding some of those challenges and maybe what we can consider how to do those. But is there anything else you wanted to mention as far as those challenges or positive impacts that we've heard of or thought of?
I don't want to make this sound like this is all sunshine and roses.
Right.
This is to me an incredibly exciting piece of technology that has the potential to change things and has the potential to change them positively, but also has the potential to change them negatively. At the end of the day, it's a tool, and every tool has both possibilities as well as problems. And so I don't want to lose sight of the equity considerations. And we're actually in February going to be putting out another Frontier post that looks specifically at the ethical and the equity considerations of artificial intelligence in higher education and the sort of challenges that we need to be very, very careful about. So I don't want us to lose sight of that, because this could go horribly wrong. This could create or really exacerbate existing digital divides in our society and folks that are the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah. And I think, you already brought up the actual device and the broadband access issues. And I think those are very hard, but I do think there are steps we can do to address those. I think some of the bigger deals right now, at least in my opinion, is the bias inherent from programmers, because equity work that we do now really won't impact the field until they're done with school or at least through some programs and some education. So, that's a bit of a long-term goal. I think the other issue too is exactly what you talked about, is those with the access to the technology and the broadband now are the ones that are going to learn how to deal with AI and be able to use it for their own benefit or the benefit of their families or the benefit of their peers. And those that don't have that access are not. And so I think it's hard to think about, and it's something that I think anyone that is interested in the true success, not just are you able to fill in a box with like the rote memorization that you mentioned, but do you want true success in your life? That's what we have to pay attention to now. So what's next? What's next for WCET? You mentioned a blog in February. What else are we doing to help our higher ed community, and especially our members, really get a good understanding of this as much as we can for now, and live with it as we go day to day?
So we're going to be releasing a short brief in February, late February, early March, that's going to be an overview of what all of these tools are that are out right now.
Excellent.
So that people understand and can begin playing with these different tools, because you really can't understand what this technology does until you get in there and you play with it. So we'll be releasing that in late February, early March. We'll do another blog post in February that looks at the equity and the ethics issues that are involved in AI in higher education. AI is actually going to be one of the four themes that WCET really focuses on in 2023. We believe that we'll be doing a much larger white paper this summer that's going to speak directly to the pedagogical and the policy implications of AI, because I don't think any of the conversation so far has been about how this is going to change our policies in higher education, especially in distance education and digital learning. So all of that is on the horizon for our WCET members.
Excellent, excellent. And just so everyone knows, we did publish just yesterday a blog post on this topic. Is AI the new homework machine? Understanding AI and its impact on higher ed. You could check that out now at wcetfrontiers.org. Subscribe and stay connected. That's open to anyone. That's public facing. And so you can keep up on some of our work there. And our WCET members will get a lot more content that will be member only, events and white papers and things too. So if you want more information on how to join us, or if you are a member, check out our website, which is wcet.wichi.edu. So, Van, before I ask you our final question, I always ask all of our guests, is there anything else you want to bring up about artificial intelligence, cat poetry,
Just that I
philosophies?
think
I
we're
don't
in
know.
for a wild, just that I think that we're in for a
Right?
wild ride.
Yeah, I agree. Should be interesting for sure. So this is our question that we ask every guest, and it's just something fun. It can be something you learn professionally or something personally, but I'm just interested in something new that you've learned this week. And it can be related to AI or something else.
I am spending a lot of time learning about AI, thank you, Carol. I finished two books this last week that are kind of interesting when you juxtapose them. One is Audrey Waters' book called Teaching Machines: The History of Personalized Learning. And the other is a book by Henry Kissinger and a couple of other authors called The Age of AI and Our Human Future. And it was really interesting to read these two books in tandem. Audrey Waters' book really looks at the history of personalized learning and the role of technology in personalized learning and how it has oftentimes devolved into behaviorism. Think about B.F. Skinner and his pigeons. And that may not be the best way to think about education. That behavioralist approach limits an approach that really focuses on liberation and humanity, the sort of approach that Paulo Freire and other liberationist educators have focused on. And so it was interesting to read that critique of technology in personalized learning historically against the Kissinger book that really focuses on here's how AI, here's how the technology may fundamentally change how we think of ourselves. And what becomes that unique intrinsic value of a human in this new world of AI? So both of those books have made me really think a lot about, first of all, what is learning and what kind of learning do we want and what should be the results of that learning? And then have made me start thinking about this bigger philosophical issue of what is it going to mean to be human, in a world of deep learning, artificial intelligence?
Wow, the question of what it really means to be human. That's actually my toddler was learning that this week. She has a I walked into their she's in pre-K, and I walked into their little classroom to pick her up, and they were talking about what it means to be alive. And little toddler answers for that is pretty cute, but it was, that they drink water, that they breathe. I think one was that they fell down. But they grapple with that even at 4 years old. So
Well,
we're
and
still
we're going to be
grappling with it.
grappling we're going to be grappling a lot with it, I think, in the next few decades.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And yeah, bring it back to learning. Yeah, what does it mean to learn? And I, you know, I when I did my graduate work, we talked about that, and you read these foundational educational texts, and it just seems like every time there's a new big technological advance, we have to go back to that same question again and see how that's changed. Well, what I'm actually gonna stick with kind of our conversation with what I've learned, and I think that the conversation on what it really means to be alive, that's just a wonderful, I think, way to leave our conversation today, and what it means to learn. So, Van, this has been an absolutely incredible conversation, different than what I had anticipated it would be. I thought we would talk a lot more about the specific technologies and what that chat GPT is doing out there and what OpenAI is doing. And I so enjoyed how the conversation actually came out about, you know, more about thinking how it truly will impact us as humans. So I really appreciate you sharing with us today.
Well, I've been happy to have the conversation. I think it's a fascinating conversation and something that is going to become more and more and more important for us to have. And higher ed should lead on that.
For sure, for sure. Well, we hope you all will stay in this conversation with us and learn with us this year. Like I said, check us out at Frontiers and on our website. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks.